Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Is it French? Is it German? Or is it French? I think you might be right. We'll find out today on A Taste of the Past. Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, on this half-hour journey, or so, through culinary history. And the Alsace region is one of those places that no one quite understands or quite can figure out. Is it French? Yes. Is it German? Well, it was. Is it French? Yes. Is it German? Yes. It was a little bit of both for quite a few years, but indeed the Alsace region that we are talking about now is part of France, and it is actually well known for being one of the most famous culinary regions in the country of France, and their bakeries and pastry shops are among the most tempting in France as well. It's known for high quality, the high quality of its cooking, basically from home kitchens to cozy bistros and the brasseries, and then to some of the top-rated fine dining restaurants in France as well. It's based on locally grown crops, farm-raised animals, and wild game from the forests and the fields, and traditional Alsace cuisine is really that kind of farm, country, home cooking. That's what we draw up in our minds, many of us, when we think of it. But I'm going to have my guest tell you all about that because he experienced it firsthand. My guest today is Gabriel Kreuter. And Gabriel Kreuter is the chef of the restaurant Gabriel Kreuter. Easy one to remember. But he was longtime chef of as another chef said, the most famous restaurant in the most famous museum of the world, the Modern, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. And he just recently left there a couple of years ago to open the restaurant Gabriel Kreuter. Prior to that, Gabriel cooked at La Caravelle, at Jean Georges, and the Atelier at Ritz-Carlton. He's had quite a resume of experience both in France and here in New York City, and I'm so pleased to have him with me today to talk a little bit about Alsatian cuisine, because he does present the cooking of Alsace. You would not necessarily recognize it by looking at the pictures, but it is based on the Alsatian cuisine, correct, Gabriel?
It is largely based on my background, on my history, yes.
And it's interesting because one of your most your signature dish, is the tart flambé with sauerkraut, and doesn't look anything like
Yes, yeah. A long time ago, when I opened actually the Modern, I started to do the tart flambé, and it was very, very well received. And now you see it all over the city.
But just to give our listeners that visual, it is a little tiny tart, about 2.5-3 inches in diameter. It has caviar on top. Comes under a smoking glass.
Absolutely.
Filled with what? Applewood
smoke to remind you of the smokiness of the sturgeon.
Of the sturgeon, and it is a sturgeon and sauerkraut tart. Amazing! It is just an amazing dish. So this is from the original Alsatian types of dishes, right?
The sauerkraut is. I mean, the original dishes that stem from the Alsatian cooking that I do right now at the restaurant. You have the tart flambés that are made with fromage blanc, onions, and bacon, which is sort of a historical dish from the Alsace region. It's a dish that the farmers used to make in their ovens while they were heating the ovens for making bread. So once in a while, once a week, it went from farm to farm on the street, and they gathered together. So they had tart flambé, and when the tart flambé party was over, the oven got cleaned, and the stones were hard enough to bake the bread, and that was the story. So they leave after with the bread.
Oh, interesting. interesting. That's great. Why waste that heat if you're heating
exactly.
up the oven?
Exactly. Yeah, that was the reason for them to really gather together and have a party in the old days.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, you grew up in the Alsace region, right?
I grew up in Alsace, in Alsace region, in a very small town, about 1,500 people in the town, and I grew up on a farm. So I always knew farm to table. That is like nothing new to right. to us, you know, because that's the way we grew up. And later on, that whole thing made had a different spin. But farm to table was just natural for us. Hmm. And I grew up on that farm, and a lot of people in my family were involved in food business. I had my uncle who owned a hotel restaurant, so I spent a lot of times in my young years during the school vacation helping out in the kitchen. I always wanted to be a chef, no question. You know, since I remember very, very little, when my grandfather used to ask me, what do you want to be? I always wanted to be a chef. So it was completely natural for me to follow that path. And from there, I grew up on that farm, and I did my apprenticeship with my uncle then. I have another uncle who owned a pastry shop.
And so you have the full
whole
gamut.
Right? Yes, yeah. And I lived on that live farm with all those products. And a third uncle was a butcher. Huh. So the whole food in the whole food world was in my family.
Well, when I think of Alsatian cuisine, and not, you know, now I'm learning, you know, from you, you know, the background and the history, but I think of heavier meats, heavier dishes, sort of like stick to your ribs kind of.
Yes,
you know.
Because you have to remember where it comes from. It's the true cooking from the farms. And a lot of food was based, it's the pig, basically. The pig is the main animal that gets raised on those farms. And that with that, they do all the charcuterie, the liverwurst, the head cheese. It's literally the most vineyard piece animal in Alsace. Mm-hmm. Because it's so...
I love the way you say Alsace.
it's so broad in the usage, you know, in the smoking the meats, brining them, cooking them in baker ovens, cooking them in sauerkraut, making all the sausages and all that stuff. So the usage is very, very broad.
And it nose is, to tail before nose to tail became a
yes,
a,
exactly,
a
exactly.
Term, right?
and the farm cooking is such that those people used to work the whole day on the farm, so they needed to have a hearty cooking. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, some of those dishes, like the bake-off, as an example, they used to prep this in the evening, and when they left in the field to go to the fields, they dropped it off at the baker. The baker put it in the oven, and when they came back in the afternoon or something, they had a hot meal.
Talk about slow cooker.
Slow cooker, yeah, exactly.
Well, describe what a baker-off is.
A baker-off is, it's usually made with three kind of meat. Pig is in it, is beef in it, and some people put chicken in, and some people put lamb in. So it all depends on which level you want to go. And it's sliced potatoes marinated with white wine, a couple carrots in there, and spices. Mm. And it's just cooked like this in a pot crock with a top on it. And they close it off with a little bit dough,
pastry,
cooked for like 4 or 5 hours in the oven, easily,
it.
Yeah, and sealed with a pastry. Mm. And when you open that, it's a one meal dish. Like a lot of dishes in Alsace, sauerkraut, baker off, are one meal dish. Tripes, or the stuffed pig stomach. That's like mm-hmm. a big item over there. Mm. And all the different sausages.
What do they call the stuffed pig's stomach?
It's estomac de porc farci. It's the stomach that is very nicely cleaned, mm-hmm. and then it's stuffed with sausage, potatoes, leeks, and then it gets braised with white wine. And once it's cooked, it gets sliced almost like porchetta, if you want.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how a lot of these, you know, old peasant country dishes have become very popular once again.
All this, yes, it's because people, there are roots behind, there is something, there is comfort behind that.
Yeah. Not to mention good taste.
Good taste, comfort, there is that sensibility, you know, you have, in Alsace, you have that comfort from the Germans, and you have the sophistication from the French. So you have kind of like, what's happening over there? It's almost, when somebody asks me, what is Alsatian cooking? I tend to say, well, it's almost kind of like the fusion before fusion really was talked about. It's like the French and the German influences in combined and they did the best out of it. Yeah. And with that rich history behind, and it's more you look into it, more you see that it's really what happened, you know?
Right. The spoils of war. Germany got Alsace, then it was returned to France, and then Germany got
again,
it
again three
and
times.
We get the spoils of war. We get the wonderful combat, the fusion food that that came of the two cultures. That's terrific. Of course, the pastries. Now, when I think of the pastries of the Alsace region, I don't see any of the heavier German influence in there. That to me is all very.
It's a little bit more connected with the Austrian side of it.
Yeah, I was going to say yes. Viennese.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah. And it's very heavy. What is Alsace is very, very well known is for the cheesecake we do, the Alsatian cheesecake, but we do it with egg white, and it's very fluffy.
So it's light? Oh, yeah.
It's light, yeah. And then pain de pice, spice bread, yes, that they used to do in the 17th, 18th century, but the spice bread that are as big as a Gruyere cheese. Very, very big. And you can see them sometimes in little markets like Kaisersberg and Rigvier, especially on Christmas time. And they cut you slices, literally like when you go to the cheese market and they cut you a slice of cheese, they cut you a slice of pain de pice.
Wow.
So that's what's really Alsace is known for, yeah, that smell on Christmas time.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's interesting because the they're speaking of cheeses, of course, Munster cheese.
Munster cheese, yeah, absolutely.
The town of
the
Munster.
The most famous one, yeah.
And did not, fromage blanc, or basically creme fraiche,
fromage blanc. It, like in every region where it's farmed, it's used, you know, that's fresh cheese. This is all done by the farmer himself at the time when you have the fresh milk, like I was little, we had cows and fresh milk. So you wait a couple hours, not even a couple hours, and the cream comes up. Mm. And then you go with a big spoon and scrape that cream off. And you use that cream either for cooking and sometimes to make your own butter. So I remember the time when I used to make butter with my father. We had one of those glasses and
barat
to do the butter homemade. So those are very, very interesting steps when you're young and you learn that. It's eye-opening, you know?
Yeah, that sounds delicious as well. I mean, I salivate just thinking about
it. Very simple things, and later on in life, it makes you remember those things. It makes you salivate, just like you say.
Right. And yet, from that region, we talk about all these things that came from originally from the people on the farms, but also the region is known for fine dining. I mean,
the region people love to eat. Yes, in that region, and people are coming from all over to eat in the Alsace region. We have a lot of people coming from America in that region eat in Alsace. They a lot of Swiss people, Belgium, they all come down and eat in that region. In one of the most famous Auberge de Lille is one of the most famous restaurants worldwide. They have like 3-star Michelin since in the 67 or something like that. And it's a beautiful restaurant. It's kind of an old farm, right, sitting on a little water spring. And it's beautiful, Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, because for all of this, you know, home cooking, it's long been known for restaurants. And,
yes,
you know, fine
absolutely.
Dining. And guest houses, a lot of guest houses that were served.
A lot of guest houses, farm little farms that are, they call it ferme auberge, where they allow people to come in. They have 4 or 5 rooms, and they allow to come in and they sell them their own products.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's beautiful, yeah.
It's like agriturismo.
Yeah, yeah absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. When you, I mean, you have been... it's been written that you bring these dishes to your restaurant, but of course with a more delicate hand, a finer hand, and with, you know, but yet letting the ingredients show through. Do you think that's sort of a holdback to your, you know, to your experience and time on the farm?
Yes, I think it's part of what I grew up with, my time on the farm, my time of working with people that were not really... You know, I never really worked with people that followed too much of a trend, always being true to yourself, being true to what you believe in, and keep doing it at a high level and to make people happy. Mm-hmm. We are in the industry of giving, and what is the best thing we can do is making people happy with what we do. And when we achieve that, I think we win.
Absolutely.
And the taste of products, it's learning how to find the right product, learning how to use the product to this to his best and full potential, and just making it shine.
Oh. How do you think the cooking or the cuisine, if not products, of the Alsace region have changed over time? Now, you've experienced it for a while now and come and cooked in all these high-end restaurants in the United States. What do you think?
It has changed a little bit, just like everywhere in the world, I will say, with the industrialization. Less people cook at home, but they still have access to it through the families. There is somebody within the family. Family life is very, very important in Alsace, and on every occasion there is a family gathering. So in the next, right now on Sunday, you're going to have Mother's Day, but on Mother's Day in Alsace, it's going to be end of the month of May, you usually have a gathering at home where 10, 15, 20 people gather together and they cook together and they have a great time. They do that on Easter. They do that all the big events. It's really big home cooking, and they showcase what they love and the region.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you still find, and yet today you probably find restaurants that have gone into more of the nouvelle.
I think it depends what they want to showcase. Some people want to showcase the terroir, the region, mm-hmm. and some people just putting that aside and go for something else. It all depends the philosophy behind the person who's running that business. But with the modernization, it changed just like everywhere else, but it's still rooted very, very deeply into the history of what made that region. Yeah,
but it is a very food-centric.
Very food-centric, region. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, not only food, but there's also some beer and wine to talk about.
Beer and wine, absolutely.
after we take a short break, we're going to get into some of that as well. So stay tuned.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you. The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes,
which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He'll be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes.
And some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Okay, we're back, and I'm talking with Gabriel Kreuter, the chef of Gabriel Kreuter Restaurant in Midtown in New York City. And this is a relatively new restaurant, Gabriel.
This is absolutely, yeah, it is a new restaurant. We opened actually in June 18th last year, a little bit less than a year.
Yeah, and it's right in the center of town, overlooking Bryant Park.
Absolutely, it's on beautiful. 42nd Street, right inside the Grace Building, yes.
Yes, that's right. It's been written about you that your food, some writer called it post-nouvelle. Okay. But they did say that, you know, in this era that we are in with a lot of these very, how can I say, Spartan restaurants, good good food, but you know that there's something. This ambiance is not big in a lot of the restaurants. But it was also written about you that you prove that fine dining still exists.
And well, I believe that good food is here to stay forever. It's and over the years the pendulum has gone one way or the other, and sometimes a little bit too far. And I think there is a right middle somewhere. And I believe that people are still love to eat, and they just need to be themselves and adapt to. And just have a good time. Just enjoy it, you know?
Well, it is a very special restaurant, too. A high-end restaurant, white tablecloth, very elegant, that people, who can go there very often. But also, it's a wonderful place to go when you are feeling a little special and you want to treat yourself to a very special meal. I look at it, you know, that way as well. And one of those to, you know, keep on the top of your list is, you know, a great place to go. I will say that I was taken by a lot of the different reviews that writers wrote about it. And John Mariani in particular was very, very taken with the restaurant. And he said that Kreuter's vision of food is based on the principle that by using the finest ingredients, very little has to be done to any of them beyond pairing them up so that their flavors remain pure and distinct while wholly complementary. And I think that is what you were talking about. Have you just it's good food and it's...
Well, I think, yeah, good food is using the product and bring it to the fullest, to its fullest potential. And also I believe that no matter which dish it is, it should have a harmony in it. It needs to make sense. The flavors need to come together. And I believe in food that I love to eat, you know. Mm-hmm. I think you produce the best if you do it with passion. And anybody who's doing something, I think, and it's passion driven, it shows in the plate, it shows at the end result, and that's really, really important for me when I hire young cooks. My most important thing I'm looking for is really the passion in what they want to achieve in their own life. But the passion if the passion is not in their belly, it's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. So many people think that, oh, I can run a restaurant. Oh, I can be a cook. Oh, I can do this. But you're right.
No,
there has to be a passion.
It's the misconception of what we do, being a chef. I think a lot of people don't realize how much work it takes to get to a point where I am. I'm working, you know, that was my dream forever, to open a restaurant, but it took me 30 years to get to this point.
Yeah.
So I think, and when you want to open a business, I think what you want to open a business that is sustainable. So it needs to make sense. The whole thing needs to come together.
Interesting. That's true. It is. We record out of the back of Roberta's restaurant in Brooklyn, and it is a pizzeria as well as additional dining. And we had our engineer bring us, and my assistant Kat bring us, a pizza for the studio. And I thank David and Kat for that. Thank you very much. And as I look at this pizza, I'm thinking of Flammekuchen.
Flammekuchen, yeah. Tarte flambé, yeah, absolutely.
Tarte flambé. I mean, really, what is the difference here between pizza and tarte? Well, I mean, there's differences.
There is no tomatoes on it. There is fromage blanc on it. Again, see, this is a dish that the farmer came up with, like I said earlier. It's done the day they do bread. So they use bread dough to do the crust and fromage blanc that they have from the farm, onions and bacon. So that's the whole story. It's a full circle. And it's something that they had. And it is a sort of the Alsatian pizza. It's the region staple, just like the Münster cheese.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how many... You'll see this on the menu in America a lot of times, just because people maybe want to elevate, a simple little tart or a pizza, and they'll call it.
And it's a great opener for if you have a beer to start, maybe, or a glass of even a glass of champagne. It's a great starting point.
Ah, that's me. Champagne and pizza. You
to
got
have
it.
to have a discussion and go into the meal. You know, it's the taste of it, and it breaks the ice and makes everybody come together. It's amazing.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, speaking about beer. Okay, the Alsace region. Well, I'd be remiss without talking about the beer of the region, and of course, Wine. The Alsatian wine.
And
right?
then the eau de vie, the schnapps, yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't even going to talk about that, but see, I didn't even know.
No, but beer, beer, absolutely, in Alsace. I mean, people love to drink beer. It's just, I mean, Germany's next there. You know, Germany, Belgium, all that whole region loves to drink beer. And in Alsace, one thing that we do with beer is we do a piconbière, which is a liqueur that we put into the beer, and it makes it dark, and it's a nice aperitif. Exactly, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So a piconbière, a lot of people will start their meal with a piconbière.
Nice.
Which is really, really a staple of that region.
Well, and there are, so is there a lot of, I'm going to say craft brewery, but a lot of home brewing going on in the brasseries, or...
You have it coming back now. They went through a whole period of where all the big beer companies bought each other out, and you know, just like everywhere else, where the big brands are buying each other up. So mm-hmm. that's what happened. Mm-hmm. But the most known breweries that you have over there is Meteor, Schützenberger, and Kronenbourg.
Okay. All right, and let's move on to
wine.
Wine, yeah.
Well, I mean, the wine region—it's a beautiful wine region, and most of the wines are grown in the Jura, where they have the little hills, and they do many, many different grapes: Riesling, Silvaner, Gewürztraminer, Tokay. So the difference in the region is that every single grape is vinified on its own. It's never blended.
Hmm,
although some people starting to blend now, mm-hmm. but mostly it's one grape at a time. And if a winemaker has six kind of grapes, he's gonna do six different vinifications, each wine on its own.
Mm-hmm. Now, and looking for the wines of the Alsace, there I will also see Rieslings in particular of the Moselle.
Of the Moselle, yes.
Yeah, now, so where is the separation here coming in as far as the wine producers?
The region from Alsace, Moselle is already in on the German side.
Right.
The wines that are produced in Alsace, why they're so reputed is that they don't have the sweetness. They're naturally very dry. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes the difference from the Mosel side, which they have more residual sugar even at normal regular wines.
Right.
They have more residual sugar.
So the primarily they're white wines?
Primarily white wine. The only red wine they do is a Pinot Noir,
mm-hmm.
which not many winemakers do. It's mostly based on white wine. They do also a Crémant d'Alsace, a champagne style, mm-hmm. made with Riesling. One nice grape that we have also that usually we drink when we eat tarte flambé is Muscat, a very flavorful wine.
Right, right. And of course, then you finish your meal and you have a little bit of
a little eau de vie. Schnapps.
Eau de vie.
I grew up doing that, and I still my mother still has the right of doing it. So every farmer had the right of doing a certain amount per year with the fruits of the farm.
So tell me about the making of that.
The making of that is that you take the fruit. It's either Mirabelle, Kirsch, or plum, and you take them the ripest possible, and you make them ferment. And once they fermented, then you boil them in a alembic. I don't know how you call it. In a barrel.
Stainless steel vat. Yeah,
it's usually
distiller.
Copper. A distiller, yeah.
Yeah, distiller.
And it's burned twice, once to get the first brew out, and then the second time to really refine it. And that's something that is done usually once, twice a year, and most of the time when they get the fruit in summer and then in the cold winter months, February, March, still around that time, January sometimes, they do that then, the farmers, because there is not too much work in the fields, so they do their own, they burn their own schnapps, mm-hmm. during those months. And it's usually a whole day event. They start at 5 o'clock in the morning until late in the evening.
Ends with a party, I'm sure.
And it's a party. It's a tasting party.
Right. Well, eau de vie just sounds so much more sophisticated.
Yes, it sounds.
Anyway, so when you said that,
everybody does it slightly different. Some people like it a little stronger. Some people like it when it's more fruity. So it's like always that when they come together, they always have that debate. Oh, mine is better than yours, uh-huh. and this and then all that stuff, you know.
Well, you said that you still have the right to do it, and your mother retains it. Do you get license a particular amount?
They don't give new licenses out anymore. But when there is one license in the family, my mother is the last generation, so that's going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
So she calls you up and says, Gabrielle, it's time.
Yeah, my brother is doing that, and I used to really enjoy to do that. So it was really. I don't drink much of it, but I love the process
you
and doing it.
You can't drink much of it and remember that you did, right? Right. That sounds like such fun, too, but, I mean, a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. I mean, everything, you know, all those little... What's nice in all of those things is to understand the process from A to Z, and I think that's what gives you a good understanding of what it takes to do something good. Right. You know, it's like how important the base product is. It shows at the end all the little details here and there added together at the end is a big detail.
Right. Well, let's fast forward to today and to your restaurant. As I've described, it's a beautiful place. You know, fine dining, elegant, very elegant room. And as I said, I'm going to on the website homepage. I'm going to post that picture that. Paul, I can't pronounce his last name.
Wagowitz.
Yeah. We'll credit him with that photo. It's a beautiful photo of the
sturgeon tart.
Yes, of the sturgeon tart with the smoke, the smoke coming out of the glass. You know, that's everyone has. You know, who knows your restaurant knows that dish, obviously. But what are some of the other specialties that are maybe innovations or that you're very proud of that you do at that restaurant?
At the bar, I do three different kinds of tarte flambé, flammekueche. Mm-hmm. I do the classic one. I do one with hen of the wood mushrooms and Comté cheese. And I do one that is a little bit like my take on Beglin lax.
Uh-huh.
It's with Gravlax. It's a tarte flambé with Gravlax and a little bit...
No cream cheese. Huh?
Salmon caviar on the top.
Yeah, creme fraiche, no cream
creme
cheese.
Yeah, creme fraiche, exactly. And then we do our own Mangalitsa blood sausage.
Pork.
So pork, yeah.
Mangalitsa pork,
yeah. We do our own... All the sausages that we sell are homemade. So we do our own Alsatian country-style sausage in a bar with homemade sauerkraut. We do our own liverwurst. I'm using a lot of foie gras because I come from a region where foie gras is very prominent.
I'm going to interject there because that was one of my initial questions. Is that not originally where foie gras
it originated,
came from?
Yeah,
or
came
is it in
from.
The Lyon or the it's, or Alsace?
It's big in Alsace, but it's big in Alsace with the geese foie gras. Mm. And then the south of France, the Land, is more famous for the duck foie gras.
Okay.
And now it's kind of like all morphed together, blended
it's
together.
Everywhere.
It's all over the place. But and my grandfather on my mother's side used to have a foie gras farm. He used to have a goose farm and a duck farm. Mm. So again, here I connected to the food world again through just that side
up.
Of it.
Yes, right. Yeah. So you do a dish with the foie gras.
I do foie gras. Right now, I have a beautiful one that is a sauteed one with a beer reduction and. Bereweke fruit chutney, which a bereweke is a little pastry that we do in Alsace with a lot of different dried fruits in it. So my take is using those fruits and making a chutney. We're serving that with a reduction of beer.
Oh, nice.
Brown beer. And then,
nice with the foie gras. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the foie gras terrine. Right now I have one foie gras terrine, a nice bowl, completely breaded with black truffles and served on top of muscat gelée. In the summertime, I do a beautiful foie gras that is stuffed inside with marinated mushrooms and a cantaloupe melon coulis, which is beautiful together. It's nice and bright, and the flavors come nicely together. And the pork, we're using nice pork. The squab, I have a nice squab, again, with foie gras. Squab croustillant. But everywhere are touches of Alsace without being completely... in your face, basically.
Yeah. Well, and just looking at your tarte flambé, it just if you showed that to someone and said, what is this? Never in a million years would they think it's a sturgeon and sauerkraut.
Yes, exactly.
Tart. I mean, of course, it does have that little mound of caviar on top.
The challenge was that I had people telling me, you know, why don't you use sauerkraut in a fine restaurant? And I thought about it, and sauerkraut, you know, when you grow up and you have this, when you grow up in a region and you have all of these things around you, you don't realize what you have or what you see until you kind of miss it. So some people told me, why don't you use true sauerkraut? And I thought about it and I said, how can I introduce that into a dish without sounding like it's just, you know,
peasant food,
yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, I still use peasant food and I elevate it with the caviar, but I use also the fish that is most of the time not used.
Well, you do it very beautifully.
So it's like a whole circle, basically, right. Again.
When did you first decide to introduce some of the cooking of Alsace into restaurants?
At the Modern, yeah. I had a lot of it. At Atelier, when I opened the Atelier at the Ritz-Carlton, I started to use my heritage and my background to really cook, and I did a little baker off over there, but I had the little crock pots to do it and all that stuff, and I did it not with potatoes, I did it with mushrooms and with crayfish. It was an adaptation, but a reminder of really the history of it. Mm-hmm. And people loved it because there is a little crock pot coming, they open it in front of you, you have that smell coming out.
Yeah. And the earthenware is so famous from that region.
Yeah, there are two very famous towns in Alsace that are famous for the earthenware. One is Suflenheim, which has all the hand-painted earthenware, and the other one is Betschdorf. That one is more of a bluish one. It's only blue. The other one in Suflenheim has all the colors.
Mm. Well, you're so au courant with the sauerkraut, too. Everything fermented is big again, right?
Yes, yeah, it's, yeah.
So there you go. Everything old is new again, folks. And theme of the show.
Good things stay.
You're right. Good things stay. That's a better saying, right? Well, Gabrielle, thank you so much. It has been a true pleasure learning so much about the Alsace. And I know there's a lot more to learn. And there are flavors to taste at your restaurant, Gabrielle Kreuter. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. This has been A Taste of the Past. And I'm your host, Linda Palacio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.